Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, YouTube's three principles for music and AI. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when the leader of Sheffield City Council said, "The lead mill, not my problem."
Yes, you might remember from the last edition of Setlist, if you've got quite a good memory, because we took another break. But we're not going to talk about that, because whenever we talk about us taking a break on Setlist, we always conclude by saying, from this point onwards, we're going to be every single week, and then immediately take another 6-month break. So maybe just out of respect for our listeners, we should not talk about the fact that we were away. But crucially, providing you've got a good memory and you can remember back to the last edition of Setlist at the end of last month, we talked about the ongoing Save the Leadmill campaign. So Leadmill, great venue in Sheffield, run by a team of people who've been there for many, many, many years, putting on shows there. But the building that houses the Leadmill was bought a few years ago by a company called The Electric Group, which is also a venues company. It's a company that runs venues in London and Newcastle and Bristol. And they have decided that they now want to directly run the Leadmill in Sheffield, just like they run all their other venues around the UK. So in order to do that, last year, they gave the current management team 12 months notice to basically get out of the venue so they could bring their own team in. So in theory, that existing management team should have vacated the premises in March this year. They did not. Instead, they've been running the Save the Leadmill campaign, trying to get music fans and artists and everybody in Sheffield to shout about this in a bid to get the Electric Group to change their mind and to allow the current management team to stay in place. They've actually been doing quite well with this campaign. The Electric Group argue that they are misleading people into thinking that once the current team leave, the venue will shut down, and that's definitely not what is going to happen. But nevertheless, the Save the Leadmill campaign has been quite successful, although whether or not it will result in the current team staying in situ, well, this whole thing is due to get to court next year, and legally, it kind of feels like the law is on the Electric Group's side. So on the last edition of Setlist, we were talking about how the Electric Group have applied for their own license to operate a venue in that building. There's a meeting of the Sheffield City Council Licensing Committee in September, and ahead of that, the current management team really ramping up that campaign, making the fight for Leadmill a fight for Sheffield and culture in Sheffield. And just over a week ago, as part of all of that, the Leadmill put out a new statement encouraging their supporters to write to the leader of Sheffield City Council, who was elected into that position back in May, and demand that he take a side in this dispute, the inference being that he would have to take the side of the current management team. So that happened, as say, a couple of weeks ago. And then last week, having, I suspect, received quite a lot of emails from supporters of the current Leadmill team, the leader of Sheffield City Council put out a statement basically saying it's not our role to get involved in this kind of dispute. When the licensing application comes in, it's our legal responsibility to apply the rules. And Leadmill's brilliant. We understand everyone's passion, but there ain't anything we can do, was kind of the message from the leader of Sheffield City Council.
Yeah, so probably disappointing for the existing Leadmill team, but also, I think, an accurate statement on the council's power in this situation. So now we just await the licensing committee hearing next month to see how that turns out. I do think it's a fairly optimistic campaign to think that it won't ultimately end up being operated by Electric Group, but who knows? We'll see.
Yes, I'm not sure next month's council meeting is going to change a great deal. There's still the legal action, which won't get to court till next year. And I think what we can be certain is there's quite a lot more of the Save the Leadmill campaign to come, even if the idea of it ultimately being successful, I'm not sure legally anything can be done. It would only be if the Electric Group changed their mind. And it has to be said, they do not look like they're in any mood to change their mind. So we shall see. Quick update there for you on the story from the last edition of Setlist. But as we always say, that is not actually what we're here to talk about this week.
No, later on we'll be discussing songwriter concerns over the potential sale of US Collecting Society, BMI. But first, YouTube last week announced the launch of a new YouTube Music AI incubator, which will, and I quote, bring together some of today's most innovative artists, songwriters, and producers to help inform the Google company's approach to generative AI in music. Alongside that, it published three key AI music principles and confirmed an alliance with Universal Music.
Yeah, so a triple announcement in a way coming from YouTube in relation to AI. That announcement comes, of course, as discussions continue within the music industry around the opportunities and challenges posed by AI and particularly generative AI. And of course, from a music perspective, what we're probably most interested in is the AI models that can generate music. Although artists and labels and managers are starting to use generative AI to create videos and artwork and text as well. But all of that is an ongoing conversation in the music industry. Plus, this YouTube announcement, interestingly, also followed a recent report that Universal Music, YouTube's partner on all of this, is also in talks with the wider Google company about licensing a new AI platform, which will allow users to legitimately generate tracks that imitate voices, lyrics, or sounds of established artists. And I think it's when AI is used to imitate other artists where generative AI is arguably, in the context of music, at its most controversial. This new YouTube Music AI incubator, through the partnership with Universal Music, we'll be collaborating from the off with a bunch of Universal allied artists. So that includes Bjorn Ulvaeus from ABBA, Don Was, Max Richter, Rodney Jerkins, Roseanne Cash, Ryan Tedder, Yo Gotti, and not just living artists with an alliance with Universal Music. There's some dead artists involved too. Well, one dead artist, the estate of Frank Sinatra, that has a relationship with Universal Music, are also involved in the YouTube Music AI incubator.
Yeah, and as for the big three guiding principles that will be applied as YouTube develops music making AI tools, they are basically that YouTube will collaborate with the music industry on all this rather than creating tools that could compete with it, that it will seek to provide protections for music makers and their business partners, and it will use AI to tackle any new challenges created by AI, such as in areas like copyright, spam, and misinformation. The actual guiding principles are a bit more waffly than that, but that's basically what they say. And on one level, those aren't particularly bold principles, and they don't specifically address many of the issues that have been raised within the music community about the role of generative AI. But at least it confirms that YouTube plans to partner with the music industry on all this, which the music industry will be pleased about. And given that some companies working in generative AI have implied, or in some cases outright stated, that they can train their AI models with existing copyright protected works without getting permission from or doing the deal with the relevant copyright owners, the fact that YouTube sees this all as a partnership is good news. Although you do have to think that any tech company that is already very much in business with the music industry will have to seek a collaborative approach on AI if they don't want to screw up all of their other music services. Plus, YouTube, more than any company, knows what a hassle it is when the music industry decides that you are enemy number one.
Yeah, so possibly not that big a surprise that YouTube has decided to take a collaborative approach when it comes to music and AI. And I would expect that their big existing competitors in the music industry, the Spotify's of this world, will do likewise. But has to be said, after this announcement was put out last week, that the music industry seemed to be pleased with what YouTube is saying. Well, I say that. One music company was pleased with what they were. Well, I say that. What I really mean is one person at one music company was pleased, obviously, given that we've already said the partner in all of this, the initial partner, is Universal Music. So it was Lucian Grange, the boss of Universal Music, who was getting excited, so excited, in fact, that he wrote a blog post for the YouTube blog confirming how pleased he was. And the press statement we got on all of this was keen to tell us how rare it was for Lucian Grange to write. Well, I don't know if they meant a blog post specifically for the YouTube blog, because, I mean, you know, how common would you expect that to be?
Yeah.
But I think they were basically saying Lucian Grange doesn't go around writing blog posts for other companies' blogs. His own company, he's not really writing that many. Anyway, they seem to be as excited about Lucian Grainge's blog post as Lucian Grainge's blog post was about YouTube Music's AI incubator. In that blog post, he said, "Our challenge and opportunity as an industry is to establish effective tools, incentives, and rewards, as well as rules of the road that enable us to limit AI's potential downside while promoting its promising upside. If we strike the right balance, I believe," this is Lucian Grainge speaking, remember, it's not me, I don't believe anything, "but Lucian Grainge believes that AI will amplify human imagination and enrich musical creativity in extraordinary new ways." I told you he was excited. On the collaboration with YouTube, he then continued, "Central to our collective vision is taking steps to build a safe, responsible, and profitable ecosystem of music and video, one where artists and songwriters have the ability to maintain their creative integrity, their power to choose, and to be compensated fairly."
So that's all good. Was that Lucian Grainge there confirming that individual artists and songwriters signed to Universal or with music otherwise in the Universal catalogues, will be able to choose whether or not to opt into this and other music AI schemes? Because if it is, that's possibly a bigger deal than YouTube's three principles, or it is for artists and songwriters anyway. But, you know, it's YouTube's three principles that we've gathered here today to discuss, so we should probably go through those in a bit more detail.
Yes. We are now going to read out verbatim what these three principles are, just to make sure you appreciate.
We did warn that they were waffly.
Well, yes, just to make sure that you appreciate the nice summary that Andy gave you earlier. So here they are in their full glory. I'll do principle number one. Here we go. YouTube says, "AI is here, and we will embrace it responsibly together with our music partners. As generative AI unlocks ambitious new forms of creativity, YouTube and our partners across the music industry agree to build on our long collaborative history and responsibly embrace this rapidly advancing field. Our goal is to partner with the music industry to empower creativity in a way that enhances our joint pursuit of responsible innovation." Do you remember how, when we were talking about the Save Lebanon campaign on the last edition of Setlist, we talked about how one of the recent developments in the campaign was they put out a video which had a statement about why it's important to save the lead mill with some quite rousing music in the background. I sort of feel that we need that kind of rousing music behind YouTube's principles for AI. That was principle number one.
Okay, well, principle number two, maybe I could put some rousing music behind this later, or you could just hum something now. It's up to you. Or maybe just leave it. Anyway.
Maybe we could use the YouTube countdown music. Do you know the YouTube countdown music? I quite like the YouTube countdown music. Have you never watched a live stream on YouTube?
No, never.
I think the YouTube countdown music is possibly not upbeat enough. It's quite slow. Let's not have background music. Let's just get these waffly principles out of the way.
Oh, now we're waffling. Principle number two, AI is ushering in a new age of creative expression, but it must include appropriate protections and unlock opportunities for music partners who decide to participate. We're continuing our strong track record of protecting the creative work of artists on YouTube. We've made massive investments over the years in the systems that help balance the interests of copyright holders with those of the creative community on YouTube.
And if any of you are sitting there thinking, these aren't that waffly, let's go to principle number three. Are we ready? Here we go. We've built an industry-leading trust and safety organization and content policies. We will scale those to meet the challenges of AI. We spent years investing in the policies and trust and safety teams that help protect the YouTube community, and we're applying these safeguards to AI-generated content. Generative AI systems may amplify current challenges like trademark and copyright abuse, misinformation, spam, and more. But AI can also be used to identify this sort of content, and we'll continue to invest in the AI-powered technology that helps us to protect our community of viewers, creators, artists, songwriters, from content ID to policies and detection and enforcement systems that keep our platform safe behind the scenes. And we commit to scaling this work even further.
Yeah, so there you go. YouTube has some principles. Maybe that's the big news story here. There are various rumours going around as to what YouTube and Google at large are planning in music AI. So once we get more information on all that, Let's see if these three principles really stand. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, various groups representing songwriters in the US recently wrote to the boss of American Collecting Society, BMI, asking a number of questions about the organization's decision last year to become a for-profit enterprise, as well as recent reports that it is again considering selling itself, possibly to a private equity outfit. Those reports of a sale first came via Reuters last month, and last week it was reported that a private equity outfit called New Mountain Capital had now made a $1.7 billion offer.
Yeah, so in this letter, which was published by Billboard, the songwriter groups stated, "As you know, there is no BMI without songwriters. Songwriters have a vested interest in changes at BMI and in any proposed transaction, which is wholly dependent on the songs they have written. BMI does not own copyrights or other assets. It is a licensing entity for copyrights owned by songwriters and, by extension, music publishers. Songwriters have a right to understand these decisions and how it impacts on us." The boss of BMI, Mike O'Neill, was very quick to respond to that letter, although it has to be said his response was more rationale and reassurances. He didn't actually answer the specific questions that have been posed by the songwriter organizations. Instead, he said that the shift to being a for-profit society was already benefiting songwriters. And he added, if any new owner comes on board down the line, bearing in mind this was before we had the news that there was a bid actually on the table, he said any deal with any future owner, in that deal, we would ensure that any partner embraces our mission of prioritizing the interests of songwriters, including their financial success.
Now, we should probably provide a little bit of background here. Most of the music industry's collecting societies around the world are not-for-profit organizations owned by their members, which are usually some combination of artists, songwriters, record labels, and/or music publishers. So in the UK, PRS is owned by songwriters and publishers, MCPS by the publishers through their trade body, and PPL by record labels. In the US, ASCAP is a not-for-profit owned by its members. However, BMI, somewhat unusually, is actually owned by a group of broadcasters, it having been established by the US radio sector in the 1930s as a rival to the already established ASCAP. But nevertheless, BMI still operated as a not-for-profit entity until last year.
Yes, until last year. Now, BMI's top team spent a lot of last year reviewing the society's operations, initially as part of an investigation into whether or not there were any investors out there which might be interested in buying the organization from its current owners. Despite ultimately deciding not to seek a buyer, that was the decision that was made last year, BMI nevertheless announced it was shifting to a for-profit approach in late 2022, seemingly to allow it to seek new investment in order to expand and enhance its operations. Then, as we mentioned, last month, Reuters reported that BMI was again working with the investment bank Goldman Sachs to sound out potential acquirers, Goldman Sachs having also been involved in that last year. It was speculated, alongside those reports, that BMI's board were possibly hoping that, now that it had become a for-profit enterprise, there might be more interest within the private equity domain about acquiring the society.
So this recent letter was signed by the Black Music Action Coalition, the Music Artists Coalition, Songwriters of North America, the Artists' Rights Alliance, and American Performers Union, SAG-AFTRA. The letter sought clarification on BMI's current profitability and the extent to which the introduction of a profit margin would impact on the fees and commissions the society charges on the royalties it collects for its member writers and publishers. It also wanted to know who would benefit from the profits of any sale of BMI and what impact a new owner might have on the running of the society moving forward.
As I said, in O'Neill's pretty speedy reply, he didn't go through the questions that had been posed one by one. They had been presented in quite a nice bullet point list. But what he did say was, and in this he was echoing what BMI had already said late last year, our move to for-profit was so we could invest in our company to ensure our continued success and growth for the future, while also increasing our distributions. As you know, the music industry has undergone dramatic change and continues to evolve rapidly. We need to continue to invest in our business and explore new avenues for revenue generation so we can continue to expand our distribution sources. He then set out how he believes BMI's writer members are already benefiting from the recent changes, both in terms of operational improvements that have been made and the royalty distributions that are going out to the writer and publisher members. And he said, "We share a common goal with you in that we believe music creators should be appropriately compensated for the critical contributions they make to this industry. We've proven this time and time again."
As for any future new owner, O'Neill added, "In your letter, you raise a series of questions should a sale of BMI occur. In such a situation, we would ensure that any partner embraces our mission of prioritising the interests of songwriters, including their financial success. This is especially important as we navigate this rapidly changing industry together." That commitment, as we said, may be put to the test quite soon, because last week it was reported that BMI is considering an acquisition offer from the private equity firm New Mountain Capital, which is one of a number of investment outfits interested in buying the rights organisation. Sources have told Billboard that the deal would be worth around $1.7 billion, although it's not currently entirely clear how close the deal is to being done.
Yeah, but if it does go through, BMI may well have to more explicitly answer some of the questions posed in that recent letter. Everyone in the music industry, labels, publishers, and collecting societies always banging on about how important transparency is, but never that convinced that they do much transparency. So here's an opportunity for BMI to do that and answer those questions. Although, of course, what BMI might well say is, if it turns out that by having a profit margin and by having new owners, BMI is not as songwriter friendly as it has been in the past, and that profit margin results in it charging higher fees and commissions on the royalties that it processes, well, songwriters are not locked in to any one collecting society. It's a little bit of an admin hassle to move societies as a writer, but BMI members could take their rights and their business to ASCAP if it turns out that BMI, as a profit-making, privately owned company, is no longer songwriter-friendly. And therefore, one would imagine, BMI would argue, given that there is always the threat, because in the US, you have a choice of which societies you work with as a songwriter, that puts it under pressure, and it will have to deliver on this pledge to ensure that by being a for-profit enterprise, possibly owned by private equity, it will still service those songwriters, and it will do everything it can to ensure that it keeps its commissions down and it gets more money in for its songwriter members. And therefore, perhaps people should not be too concerned about what is going to happen at BMI as a for-profit, privately owned society. It's also worth noting in the US, there are actually four collecting societies that all represent the performing rights in songs for different songwriters. And the smaller two, CSAC and GMR, they're already privately owned enterprises. So it's not unknown for collecting societies to be privately owned, particularly in the US. But I do think the questions that were in that letter, they were really good questions that I think songwriters do have a right to know the answers to. So assuming the speculation that a deal is close to being done, if that is correct and the deal does go through, it will be interesting to see to what extent Mike O'Neill can answer those questions and allay any concerns in the songwriter community. We shall see, I guess.
But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed here on this episode, you can go to the show notes, which you'll find in your podcast player now, or at setlistpodcast.com. There's links to everything in there. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you haven't done that already. Rate and review it if you haven't done that already today, multiple times. And if you've got anything you want to tell us, email us setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.